let him destroy me and end up happier than ever? No way. He doesn't get to win.
Whoever is bitten by a werewolf and lives becomes a werewolf himself.
The census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Gina! But I don't care, darling, because I love you. You've got to let me eat your brother.
Why do you eat people?
Not people. Brains. I can feel myself rot.
Sid, don't you blame the movies. Movies don't create psychos. Movies make psychos more creative.
Wheel in. Wheel. Wheel. Wheel out of here.
Did you go out with Ren?
Well, a boy's best friend is his mother.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I'm one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how are you, sir?
I'm well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
I'm doing all right. And in the state of Massachusetts?
Hey, everyone. It's Abe here.
Abe, how's it going?
Okay.
Excellent.
You sound like you're off in the distance, Abe.
Yeah, you got to get close.
Come,
to Mike.
Come into the light, Abe.
I am wearing my fucking mic.
Yeah, I'm.
I said come into the light. I didn't say what on your mic.
Hello?
Wait, we got a Connecticut American?
This is Chrissy.
Chrissy, how's it going?
Fantastic. Thank you.
Excellent. And who are we? For folks who are new to the podcast, this is Dark Discussions Podcast, where we discuss a genre film weekly. Generally, so things like horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, midnight movies, and cult films and the such. We try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. Eric, we have a website here?
We do. Our website can be found at www.darkdiscussions.com. And on that site, you can find a whole bunch of stuff. On the right-hand side of the front page, you can find links to friends of the podcast. Up at the top of the page, you can find links to different sections, including an articles section that has articles that written by myself as well as others. There's an audio section where you can find every single episode of Dark Discussions as well as our spinoff podcast available for free. And then front and center on the front page, you can find a link to our Patreon account. Patreon is a service that lets you support your online artists. If you would care to help us offset the cost of producing this podcast, which is not free, you can go click on that link, or you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. And for every $5 a month that you care to donate, you will have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly cover on the show. We take all the topics submitted by our patrons and draw them on a random basis quarterly. For more details, you can follow the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com or go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions.
That's right. And we just picked a new episode from our Patreon supporters, and that is going to be a Scottish-UK film called Caliber, though it's spelled Calibre, because the UK English thought R is before the E instead of ER at the end. So it's we're assuming it's Caliber. So we'll begin.
Or maybe
that.
It's French and it's Calibre.
That's true. That's the question. So a couple other things. We have an email, darkdiscussions@aol.com. So email the podcast films that you've seen and you want to give us your review, ideas, opinions, comments on films that we have talked about, including the one tonight, and things of that nature. And then the Facebook group, Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group. There's a lot of discussions going on there, so just search for that, and we'll get you on board once you sign up. And examples of discussions over there are things like the film It, the film Joker, A Quiet Place, The Gallows, because they came out with some trailers and such. So a lot of good stuff going on there, or a lot of bad stuff, depending on your opinion of The Gallows. So I think that's pretty much it. We have some house cleaning we can do at the end. So I think we can probably get into our podcast tonight. So, Eric, what are we talking about tonight?
Tonight we are talking about the film that you've been reading about, that you've been hearing about, that has been pulling in all sorts of dollars at the box office and is still in theaters currently, Joker.
Can you please stop bothering my kid?
Sorry.
Arthur, I have some bad news for you. This is the last time we'll be meeting.
You don't listen, do you? You just ask the same questions every week. How's your job? Are you having any negative thoughts? All I have are negative thoughts.
And finally, in a world where everyone thinks they can do my job, check out this guy.
When I was a little boy and told people I was going to be a comedian, everyone laughed at me. Well, no one's laughing now.
You can say that again, pal.
Isn't it?
For my whole life, I didn't know if I even really existed. But I do. And people are starting to notice.
You think this is funny? Is this a joke to you?
Murray, one small thing.
Yeah.
When you bring me out, can you introduce me as Joker?
Send in the clowns.
That's right. The film is Joker, 2019 film. Before we get into it further, for Mike's wife, Pam, who has asked us to give the day we are recording each episode for her own, I guess, OCDs, is this is October 17th, 2019.
Phil, at 7:30. Sorry, Phil. I got to stop you on that one. It's not for her OCD. It's
yeah,
because
a little bit.
We sometimes record these, we don't record them out of order, but sometimes they're released out of order. And without recording the date, having people try and figure out when it was recorded is kind of, you have to guess by context clues if we don't state it.
That's fair. And a little OCD, as Mike said. But just a little.
Pam, I was defending you, for the record.
Absolutely, but Eric was. This film here, 2019, it is directed by Todd Phillips. Todd Phillips is probably best known for the Hangover series films, mostly comedy and things of that nature. He co-wrote the film with Scott Silver. Scott Silver is probably known for writing credits for The Fighter and 8 Mile. And things of that nature. The film stars Joaquin Phoenix. I don't have to say who he is. People probably know who he is. It's obvious. What it was the recording. So the music was done by Hildur Guðnadóttir, who also did Chernobyl Diaries. She's an Icelandic composer. It also was edited by Lawrence Scherer, who's done almost all of Todd Phillips' films, so this is a change for him as well, from comedy
Phil?
To... Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I thought you said she did the Chernobyl series.
Yes.
Not Chernobyl Diaries.
You're right. So she did the Chernobyl series on HBO, which brought her to some fame. Thank you, Chrissy, for bringing that point up. All right, so let's just go around and discuss how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. And I guess we can start with you, Eric.
All right. I heard about this because I'm alive. It's been pretty heavily marketed. What I thought about this movie, I thought this was a very well-made movie. I thought it looked good. I thought the cinematography was quite good. I thought Joaquin Phoenix's performance was amazing. I really enjoyed the score. And I want people to remember that I said all these good things about the movie. Because I feel like I'm going to have to balance some stuff out tonight. I did think the movie had a few problems. One problem I thought it had was a little too long. There's one particular subplot that I'll identify later that I think could have been removed entirely from the movie to tighten it up a little bit, because I don't think it added a whole lot. Phil was saying earlier that super nerds are saying that it's not the Joker that they know. I don't think it's necessarily just super nerds. It's just people who have been paying attention, because I felt the same way. To me, the Joker has always been a very intelligent, psychotic bad guy who goes out with intent to cause harm, and that's not the character that's presented in this movie. This is just a guy who's mentally ill and ends up creating chaos through a series of semi-random events. And I think this probably would have worked better had they not tied it into the Batman universe. I thought that was probably the weakest part of the whole movie. 'Cause it's pretty much Taxi Driver plus the King of Comedy plus clowns, and you end up with this movie.
Network a little bit.
Yeah, right. So it borrowed from some inspirations. So I don't think it was a bad movie, but I disagree with people who are saying it's the best movie of the year, because I think there have been better movies that have come out this year. I think it was a good movie that had a few issues.
Yeah, very good. For me, I heard about this film because, as Eric stated, we are all alive. And it has been heavily marketed, as he stated. This is an interesting film in the sense that it has made me aware of odd biases in, I guess, critiques or critics, of ratings on the film. Basically, a lot of these ratings by many American critics have tried to put this in the perspective of the presidency of Ronald Reagan, the presidency of Donald Trump, the issue of race relations, and on and on and on. And it's incels.
Race relations, that one I haven't seen.
I'll tell you about that one. Because they're reinventing the Bernard Goetz and a black person on a bus is the one that's mean to a white man, and so on. There's a lot of weird things, believe it or not, I've read with critics. So as a result, I can probably agree with a lot of the Facebook people who attack me about critics. Critics are insane. And you should take a great their ratings with a grain of salt. As Eric stated, a lot of folks have said this is the best film of the year, and he's surprised that a lot of people say that because he feels that there's better. But I think this is the best film of the year. This is an important film. I feel it is a reflection in the mirror of today's world, in the sense that we have people who try to, polarize certain things in society without looking at the true causes. There's a few examples of this in this movie that really hit home when I saw them, because it was interesting, from people calling people clowns and losers, and deplorables, all the way to things like a politician attacking a person that did self-defense on a train without knowing the true facts of what happened. So there's a lot of things that are interesting about this film. So I think it has a lot to say, and it is more than just a DC comic film. I think it is a important film, and it'll be remembered in history. Mike.
Well, I like to say comics are a medium. They're not a genre. You can tell all sorts of stories. You can tell deep stories, and you can tell shallow stories. I have a particular. I know about the film, of course, being a living comic nerd. I don't know if this is the best film of the year. It is certainly for me in the contention for it, but it's. I haven't seen a whole lot of other films yet that are going to rival it. Midsommar is maybe the only one that I can think of off the top of my head. I've got thoughts. I've got deep thoughts that may go against what a lot of people thought. It's probably I've seen it twice. Saw it the other day with my wife, and then she wasn't home, and I went on saw it again, and I took extensive notes that I had to transcribe because it's hard to write in the dark in a theater. I ended up getting with a lot of notes, and somebody shared with me the original screenplay, and I've read through some of that to see what some of the changes were they made. I think I have a very different take than a lot of people do, and probably a very different take than Phil does, because I think there's a lot of stuff that goes on in this film that are sideshows and that are not really there. And I think that they nail the character of the Joker better than I think Eric does. I do think the super fans probably are not the ones that are complaining, because one of the hallmarks of the Joker in the comics is in a line from a classic Joker story is that he prefers to remember his past as multiple choice. So and he's a character who's always been reinvented for the times, and they kind of get away with that because he's insane. That gives them the reason to change his MO to be kind of whatever it is, you know, it fits his particular whim on that particular day. So there's a very wide breadth of stories that character covers over the years that are not always completely consistent with each other. I'll talk more about details and symbolism and meanings and all this other, some of the imagery that I thought was really fantastic. Though not necessarily obvious, and what I think the film was saying about the character more than anything as we get into it. But I liked it a lot.
All right. Chrissy.
I'm not a superhero or supervillain movie person. I think as most of the listeners know, and it's mostly because A, I didn't read comics as a kid, and B, I find a lot of what's happening now with the comic franchises a little too heavy on the action for me and a little weak on the story, and so I get kind of bored, so I just don't bother going. I was very surprised when in the summer I found out about this movie, because it was a trailer before something else, and I was like, oh my God, I saw this movie and I went, oh my God, I need to see this. And for me, I was really surprised by my reaction, because normally I see some kind of superhero or supervillain trailer and I go, oh, whatever, dude, Nathan, you can go see that by yourself. It's all set.
Unless it was Aquaman.
Yeah. Well, even Aquaman, I still haven't gotten around to see yet. I literally could not wait to see this. And I think it's because the trailer, first of all, it didn't give me the whole story. It was dark, it was gritty, and it was clearly putting the emphasis on a personal story. I thought this movie is probably one of the only ones I've seen in a long time for me that actually lived up to the hype. I was blown away by the acting, not just of Joaquin Phoenix. Frances Conroy, who plays his mother, is amazing. I thought Robert De Niro was just so slimy and great. I just thought he was awesome. I thought all of the actors in this were really amazing. I thought the story was tight. I thought the script was well written, not only dialogue wise, but also in having the appropriate beats to see this man going down the drain. Because what's being told here isn't a comic villain story. I would also disagree, because of something that happens at the end, that it is not the origin story that we think it is. There is some support floating around there for that idea out there, but I'll talk about it later because I don't want to blow anything. But I think what has made this movie such a hit is that your average Joe, who knows absolutely nothing about Batman or the DC universe, can go and see this and key right into it. For me, this was a story of a man who is just having a psychotic break. It's a human story. It's a universal story. And it is not an easy thing to convey convincingly either in books or film. I agree with Eric on this. I think that maybe if they want, this could have been done as just the story of a man falling apart, and they could have not tied it to Batman. And it would have been just as good. I think it doesn't need this branding on it, I guess, to take what Eric said a step further. I think the way the character is presented and written was really well done, because I felt empathy for the guy. And he just, you know, because of the circumstances, and I'm trying really hard not to be spoilery here. I thought the violence and the minimal gore was appropriate. I thought the few action sequences were short and sweet and were also appropriate to keep the story moving. I liked, let's see, what else did I like? I love the atmosphere. I thought the movie was really well paced. To compare this, I'd seen Ad Astra the week before, and Ad Astra was 2 hours and 2 minutes. They were about the same length. One was 2 hours and 2 minutes. One was 2 hours and 3 minutes. Ad Astra felt like I was sitting there for 4 hours. Joker felt like I was sitting there for 25 minutes. I couldn't believe when the movie ended. I also thought it really did well with some poetic themes, among the madness and the concept of life being a dream within a dream. But I really liked this movie. As far as it being the best one of the year, I'm siding with Mike on this. Right now, there's nothing that is blowing me out of the water for this year. I walked out of the theater when I saw this and went, fucking wow. I haven't had a movie this year do that yet to me. So for right now, it's definitely going to be the movie of the year, but there's other things I have yet to see, and I have to reassess my list, but so far it's right up there.
All right. Very good. And, Abe.
All right. First off, can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So just like everybody else, this movie was something that's kind of hard not to hear about because it's been advertised like crazy. And if you had not even had a chance to go down to the theater, things of the movie were circulating, both negative and positive, controversial, and a lot of general buzz about it. I went to see this with my brother and mother because we all wanted to see it. The crowd was small, but it was during a week nights, so maybe it was just that time. I definitely first one. Say that I agree with Christy and how the pacing makes this movie feel really quick. This movie just runs really smoothly from beginning to end. Nothing feels like it drags. It just really keeps your attention, and every moment feels I would say at least most of it feels just really well put together. There were some little bits here and there I kind of felt were maybe could be put on the chopping block just to tighten some just a bit more. And maybe this has a bit to do with the Batman brand name, because aside from a few characters who are names after those who are supposed to be, you know, from the source material, it doesn't really have a whole lot else common with it, especially the way the film feels in comparison to the other Batman storylines that we've seen, whether it's been animated or video game or the films. The feel is just very different. It's definitely just much more gritty, a lot more grounded. There's no like crazy booby traps, spraying, laughing gas, or any of those kind of things the Joker's been known for. This is a very, very much more... This is basically a man going insane. And just, you know, snapping back against the world who he feels has wronged him in every single way possible. The cast, I thought, was fantastic. I thought Joaquin Phoenix was amazing. I didn't see one bad performance in there. I think everybody really worked their butts off of what they were given. And it really just, you know, it also kind of balanced out with not just the somberness, but also some of the dark humor, too, which kind of worked well with the Joker character. I felt that the cinematography was fantastic as well. It just had a really nice feel to it that kind of just... It definitely felt like, you know, films that we compare it to, like, you know, Taxi Driver and such. That kind of very... I don't know how to describe it. If you watch those kind of films, you kind of get to feel the way that the film is presented in terms of its color and choice and stuff like that. And I think it's another thing that kind of separates it from other comic book-based movies, because comic books sometimes have a little more pronounced color or a little more dark overtaking the shots. But here it's kind of almost feels kind of like a 70s kind of filtering. Maybe just in terms of the sickly yellows and the popping colors of almost like that era. It's a very different film, and if you're going into it expecting anything like the other Batman films or any other comic book films, you're going to walk away maybe disappointed. But on the other hand, you might walk away from surprise, as I was, because it was really, really good. I don't know if I would place it in my top film this year. I definitely would say it was very entertaining, and I thought that it was definitely one of the stronger releases. But the year is still running. We only got a few months left, but I'd be hard-pressed to expect anything that would blow this off the top of the chart for me. So, I'm looking forward to kind of dissecting this and see what we can talk about.
All right, very good. And, Eric, do we have a wiki for this?
Eric? Sorry. Yes, we do. Wiki. I was muted.
It's the Joker.
In Gotham City, mentally troubled comedian author Fleck is disregarded and mistreated by society. He then embarks on a downward spiral of revolution and bloody crime. This path brings him face to face with his alter ego, the Joker.
All right. Very good. So we got... a film that's basically that wiki may be a little over exaggeration.
Yeah, I don't know if that's how I would describe the movie personally.
But. Yeah, it definitely feels a lot. The way you describe it feels like a straight up comic book storyline versus what it really is.
Well, this is a story that there really wouldn't be much trouble telling in comics. It's the tone more than anything else.
Yeah.
Again, it's a medium, not. A genre, but I wanted to read the first page because it's not of the screenplay, because it's not in the movie. It's a setting for what follows. Mm-hmm. And this is not the final draft.
That's the only part of that I got a chance to read.
Oh, okay. By the way, for folks who are curious, as Abe said, it was felt very 70s, but this is a period piece. It takes place in 1981, the film.
Right. So the screenplay title is Joker in Origin. It's important to know that it's not the Joker. It is just Joker. It's credited to Todd Phillips and Scott Silver. And the version, the draft I have is April 13th, 2018, which is probably about the shooting script. But I know from reports that they were making a lot of things up kind of on the fly. I can tell from what I've read through this screenplay, there are a lot of scenes and things moved around. This has been fairly widely available on the internet if anyone wants to find it, and you can certainly see differences there. A lot of dialogue got cut. They trimmed down a lot of fat in some of the exchanges, and I think it made the film better. It would make things less obvious and on the nose. But it says, as a table setter for anyone reading the screenplay, this story takes place in its own universe. It has no connection to any of the DC films that have come before it. We see it as a classic Warner Brothers movie, referring to the Warner's gangster films, I would imagine. Gritty and the 70s and early 80s films. We see it as a classic Warner Brothers movie, gritty, intimate, and oddly funny. The characters live in the real world and the stakes are personal. Although it is never mentioned in the film, the story takes place in the past. Let's call it 1981. It is a troubled time. Crime rates in Gotham is at a record high. A garbage strike has crippled the city for the past 6 weeks, and the divide between haves and have-nots is palpable. Dreams are beyond reach, slipping into delusions. So that's the way they frame this film.
Right, and that sounds about right.
Again, this is not intended to be an origin of the Heath Ledger Joker. This is not intended to be the origin of the Jack Nicholson Joker or the Jared Leto Joker or any other Joker that we've seen on screen, the Cesar Romero Joker. This is intended, and it's not intended to be a lead into a series of new Joker Batman films. It is intended to be its own thing. DC Comics has for years done what they call Elseworld stories, which are stories about their characters set in alternate realities that have no connection to the ongoing continuity of their regular books. And this fits very nicely within that context. So I understand there's a lot of fan theories out there. I'm not saying the fan theories are wrong. I don't think the fan theories are theories that are intended necessarily. But I don't think there's
a right or a wrong. There's just opinions.
Yeah.
Saying, I think that it's meaning a lot of them think that that's what they're setting up. So I think that these are things that they aren't necessarily intending to set up, but that certainly they could decide to do in the future. Right.
True.
I have my interpretation of this. That's based on, that's largely informed by my understanding of the character of the Joker as a longtime comic book reader and comic nerd. I'm not going to say it is the only reading of the film. It is my reading of the film based on that information. And of course, I'm bringing something to it that goes outside the text of the film itself, where someone who's reading just what's in the film can come away from something completely different.
Also, I think the other four of us, myself, Abe, Chrissy, and Eric, and if I'm speaking for any of you wrongly, please interject. But I think the four of us will probably be reviewing and critiquing this film as a film without really paying much attention to the DC connection, because, again, we're not as familiar with it as you, Mike.
I think that's fair. To me, the DC connection was more distracting than anything else.
It really, as I said earlier in my thoughts, is that there, aside from a couple of characters who are from it, the Batman universe, it really doesn't have that many major connections that really tether it to the source material. It honestly, if you had sniffed those and maybe just renaming and little changes here and there, it could have been its own film without the name.
But it wouldn't have made $90 million its opening weekend.
Oh, no.
Well, and that's why I'm kind of mad about it. It's not that I think this is a bad movie. It's just I think it was a perfectly fine movie, and they made it a comic book movie to get hundreds of millions of dollars from people.
Well, I think it was made by Phillips because he thought the character was interesting and he didn't want to rip it out of where it comes from, the DC. So I think it was more done that, and the marketing by the film company has nothing to do with how the artist decided to make the film or why they made it.
Well, that's always the case. You're right about that.
Yeah.
Well, and my understanding is, and I may not, I don't know where the players involved in this were. I don't remember if it was Phillips, if it was Scorsese, if they were conversing, or if one roped the other in afterwards, or how this worked.
Scorsese was invited to participate as an executive producer, but eventually that fell through for some reason.
Well, he was producer first. I think, isn't he still executive producer?
Yeah, you may be right. You may be right. Yeah.
But regardless, they were lamenting that something to the effect, or they were lamenting that you couldn't make those 70s films like Taxi Driver, Network. You couldn't make those films or 60s film Midnight Cowboy.
Midnight Cowboy, yeah.
That you couldn't make those films today. You know, people want to see comic book movies, and that kind of led to the idea of, well, hey, what if we did a comic book movie in that style? And then I'm guessing, you know, they struck upon the idea of doing it with the Joker as a Travis Bickle character in an updated Taxi Driver film. And so it was kind of a way to use that as a doorway to make the movie they wanted to make.
Sure.
Rather, so I don't think it started as, let's make a Joker movie. Hey, let's make a Joker movie in that style.
We got to also remember that there's no rule or law that states that comic stories have to be, you know, the ones that were made back in the 40s and 50s, or even the Batman from the 60s that was on TV. I mean, they can be gritty and dark and scary as much as they can be over the top, ridiculous and fun. So
here's how I feel, which is that I don't think anything you just said is necessarily wrong, Phil. However, for this movie, I think there's some interesting stuff in this movie. I think it's saying some interesting things in this movie, and I think the fact that the central character is the Joker distracts from that a little bit. And I think maybe people would have been more focused on that if it wasn't the Joker. You know,
Let me ask you this, Eric. Are you speaking for yourself, or do you think you're actually
I say is my opinion.
But do you think that other people agree with that opinion, or
I don't know. Go ask them.
Yeah, because I don't know, because it didn't really affect my viewing that it was a DC character. I mean, obviously, every time they said Gotham City and Arkham and things like that, it kind of
every time a Wayne showed up on screen, it distracted the shit out of me.
Okay.
I mean, so I thought it had nothing to do with what was going on.
I mean, I honestly really enjoyed the film overall, but I agree with what I said about the trailers. They don't really tell you much what's going to happen. So, going in blind, I was kind of not really sure to expect. And for the most part, most of the story is really focused on our character Arthur, and the Waynes who. They just kind of pop up here and there, just kind of like saying, hey, remember this is in Gotham City. But, you know, they're not really anything really important at all. They're just almost like character cameos, but they don't really have a whole lot to anything.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think Abe and I are on the same page.
Well, I think the thing is, you could have, because Batman never swoops in. Well, I mean, he slides down his bat pole, but.
No, he did, didn't he?
Yes, he did. You could have changed the name of the characters. So, like, I don't think they were put in there as cameos, right? They didn't have, you know, like little Selina Kyle, you know, Catwoman, you know, it pop up in the film for no particular reason, or, you know, or an Oswald Cobblepot or something, or Commissioner Gordon as like one of the two cops. I think the characters that are there and are important to the film. I don't think they put Bruce Wayne in the film any more than is needed to tell the story they want to tell about the character of Joker.
Okay.
And I just found the fact that it's a Wayne to be unnecessary. Like, give him a different name, take it out of Gotham, and it's a better movie for me personally.
Right, and again, this is for me, I'm looking at this as one of, you know, a whole long history of stories like this, and where, you know, this is sort of like, if you're looking for who is the power player in Gotham City 15 years before Batman? It's Thomas Wayne. So it makes sense to me that he's there, but that's coming from my perspective. I understand what you're saying. I'm just saying I don't think their roles weren't unnecessary in the film, but they could have done it with another character's name, and yeah, and would have been less distracting. I know who's it? Sean Spinks had a real problem with the fact that it was Thomas Wayne, whereas they had done it
but he had as film, Thomas Jones. So I'm not even worried about.
Phil.
He didn't see the film.
So I know he didn't see the film, but he wouldn't see the film because he didn't like the fact that they used Thomas Wayne. Whereas if they had done the same exact thing with a character who was not Thomas Wayne, he wouldn't have had an issue with it.
Mm-hmm. So I think we're getting into details now. So I think we should throw up a spoiler flag so we can really get into it. But I think even though we have differing opinions, we all recommend this movie, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I absolutely do. And I would like to throw up the spoiler flag because I wanted to say something about my take on it. And I can't on what you guys were just talking about. And I can't do that until we put up.
Well, then let's throw up the spoiler flag officially so that you can do that.
Go ahead, Chrissy.
Spoiler flag's up. Go, Chrissy.
Spoiler flag is up. Okay, so I know we're jumping ahead to the end of the movie. There's been a lot of talk online about the famous, you know, Bruce Wayne's parents get killed in the back alley, all of that stuff, and its connection to the DC universe and how some fans were disappointed and they, like Sean, didn't want to go see it because of the Wayne thing. As someone who is not a Batman fan, never has been, doesn't give a shit about the comic books or any of the villains or what's going on, I am familiar, however, with the shooting in the alleyway. I have seen that. I'm not completely ignorant. I thought...
And the pearls, Chrissy! The pearls!
The pearls were amazing. It's not only the casting the pearls before swine, but it is also the imagery that anything can be sullied. Anything can fall into despair. Anything can fall into decay. And that is exactly what happened with the Joker, because it's his story of his descent into madness. However, when we got to the end and we got to that last scene, Nathan and I were talking, and Nathan looks at me and goes, "Well, that was an interesting origin story." And I said, "What?" And he said, "Well, did you see the guy who came back and killed him at the end in the alley?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Yeah, that guy is probably the one who's going to end up as the Joker as we know it. And he was inspired by this crazy before him." And I went, "Oh my God, that's brilliant." So that's how I took it. Is that if you wanted it to be an origin story, to me, I was like, that's a really interesting idea. Because we are talking about several years before the real Joker, you know, like the Joker that we know comes up against his arch nemesis. And the idea that this man would be running around unchecked doing all of this shit for however many years until Bruce Wayne, you know, grows up and takes over didn't kind of work for me. And it didn't kind of work for Nathan either. And I was like, but that's really interesting, because a little later, I'm going to talk about the scene that precedes that where Joker is up on the car and he's rallying the troops. And, mm-hmm. you know, when everybody's clustered around him. And Phil, I know that there are people who have commented about this being a political statement. I looked at that not as a political statement for today's times. That, to me, very much paralleled the beer hall putsch in 1923 and what Hitler did, which I'm going to talk about later. But that was just my two cents. We can move on now and go to the beginning of the movie before
Eric, just what you've been waiting for. Yay, another World War II metaphor. There you go.
Well, technically, the beer push was before World War II.
Whatever.
World War II era.
Fair enough.
So before you all go into a history lesson, I want to say that there's – I saw this movie – I did not watch The King of Comedy until after I had seen this movie. So after I watched the movie, I started reading some reviews and saw many comparisons between the two movies. So I decided to check it out, and boy, are they right. But even before I had seen that, like the subplot that I think could have been totally extracted from this movie without any harm was the whole thing with the neighbor. Because I never was buying it. Like he follows her and she shows up at the door and goes, basically, hey, were you stalking me? I'm really into that. It's this whole thing. It's just like I never bought the fantasy. At the same time, I don't think they made it quite as obvious as it was in The King of Comedy. So I don't know if they were actually trying to fool people or not. But I just found that whole thing to be weird and distracting and thought the movie would have been better without it.
The whole thing for the character Sophie is almost very insignificant because of how very little attention it has. I mean, Sophie's barely in any scenes in terms of actually interacting. We only see like some quiet moments between them with some background music. And while I thought it was, since I was less is more to kind of bring up a twist, I felt that the impact kind of was a little weak because of how little of the character she was and how little of the connection was explored between him and Arthur. That the very realization that he never was with her should have felt much more impactful than it was.
Right. It's like they reveal it and you're like, yeah, well, no shit.
Well, but see, I would have to disagree a little bit with you guys there because I didn't get a chance to talk about this yet, but you really got a sense of how miserable, how lonely, and how isolated this guy is. And I thought that the screenplay did a great job of not telling us that, but showing us that instead and showing it in imagery that is familiar to the average person so that we can better empathize with him. Like, all right, he goes to the mailbox to get the mail every day, and each day he opens it, it's empty. And he's constantly isolated through all this. Mm-hmm. All the clowns he works with either treat him as though he doesn't exist or they're outright mean to him. But he has two very strong delusions, right? He has the delusion with Murray Franklin, played by Robert De Niro, who idolizes on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And he says in that delusion that, oh, you're just like a father to me, you know, when they hug and they do this, and that he wishes Murray were his father. And
well,
this guy, let me finish. I think with the girl, it was the same thing. I don't think either of these delusions were meant to be a side story or to try to fool us that they were delusions. I think what those two things specifically were trying to show was that he was so miserable and he was so lonely that all he really did have, I mean, even his mother shit on him, you know, all he had were his delusions. Wow. And they were also very early kind of in the film. And I think the reason for that is that they might have been trying to set up the precondition for, you know, his fantasies generally get eroded. Do you know what I mean? As time goes on, and then he has nothing to run to anymore. And so I don't think that this was meant to be like, ooh, a surprise. Or I really think it was meant to establish where this guy was fucked up.
Well, so and you're not wrong, Chrissy, but I got all that without this subplot. So I don't think it was needed. And I also thought the manner in which they did the delusions with the talk show host, that was, I think, better communicated than the ones with the neighbors, because that's clear that he's having this fantasy in his head and that's what he wants and he can't have it. Whereas the neighbor, it felt like they were trying to paint that as something that was actually happening, and that bugged me a little.
Yeah,
I think, first of all, it was a problem area of the story in development, because in the story originally, and I think they filmed some of it, that relationship was sort of a real relationship. Those things kind of happened, except she was just the neighbor who was showing him kindness. It was never a romantic thing.
Mm-hmm.
She was just sort of taking pity on it and was like a friend relationship. And then the scene where he walks into her apartment near the end of the film, he walks into her apartment and she's fucking another guy. And this is when he realizes he's been deluding himself as to what his relationship is with her.
Right. But so they changed all that then.
So they changed all of that. And I don't know how much of that was shot, because it takes very little editing to fix that.
Right.
You just cut out the scene with the boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And refilm that, you know, a little bit of refilm that scene in the apartment. And, you know, they got Zazie Beetz, who has been doing pretty well and for relatively small role. You know, again, it's kind of it's odd that they would cast that name in that particular part, given how small it ends up being. But I think it's also intended to throw doubt.
I don't even know her. I'd never seen her before until this.
Well, so. She played Domino in Deadpool, and she's been in a couple of other things since then.
Okay.
In Deadpool 2. Deadpool 2.
Oh, yeah. I know who you're talking about now. Yeah.
All right. So the Murray Franklin thing was, hi, this is an obvious dream sequence, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's obvious when you're in it, it's a dream sequence.
Yeah.
Right.
Or a fantasy sequence.
Yeah.
I think this is done to throw questions on everything else that happens in the film, because this is a film where everything is from Arthur's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And we have to question the unreliable narrative. How much of things like the gun, where did the gun actually come from? You know, was it really given to him by Randall, or is Randall telling the truth when he says he didn't give him the gun? You know, this throws everything kind of into doubt.
Well, yeah, that's part of that burlesque thing I was talking about, the unreliable narrator.
Mm-hmm. And that's not the case if all you do is have the Murray Franklin thing, because the Murray Franklin thing is so very obvious to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And this is something that, you know, it throws his delusions in his own face, where he realizes his delusion that he's having trouble separating fantasy from reality. Because where the character, I think, knows that he was fantasizing about, you know, Murray Franklin, just as, you know, Eric, you might go watch a concert and picture yourself on stage playing guitar with the musicians.
Mm-hmm.
Here, you know, that's how he's fantasizing Murray Franklin, but he's aware that's a fantasy. He's now realizes he can't tell what's going on anymore. He doesn't know anything, and that ties in with everything else going on in his life.
Yeah.
You know, and that to me, this is a story not about him becoming the Joker, but him uncovering the Joker. That the Joker is who he was and who he's always been, and he's just not embraced it. That's part of him has been locked away ever since he got out of the asylum.
But Mike, a lot of folks that have these bad egos, or alter egos, I should say, that, you know, inside them, a lot of them aren't released because society is normal. They aren't beaten down. They're not, and so forth. So, in other words, you could have, like, the old, not joke, but old saying where they said, if Adolf Hitler was born today in the United States, he would be your next door neighbor mowing the lawn. But when society goes to the crapper, like it was in 1920 and 30 Germany, you have, as Chrissy said, the beer hall push, and people that have issues like a Hitler or a Stalin or a Mao Zedong pop out of the woodworks when the society around them goes down. So technically you're right that everybody, I mean, or I should say that Arthur Fleck was the Joker all along, because he becomes the Joker. However, had he not been treated terribly, or he had the medical help that he needed, or the society
he did
didn't
get the medical help he needed.
Not completely, no. But if he didn't get beaten up on the alley and get fired and all these other things, that Joker would never have appeared.
Right. But so elements and small elements, but elements from many, many, many different stories. One of the ones that most influenced this is one that was called The Killing Joke. And a portion of that story is told as a flashback of the Joker remembering his origin. And you remember the 89 Batman film, a Joker gets dumped into a vat of chemicals, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this what they never explored is who was he before that. And so this doesn't challenge that notion of that that's who the character was. But it says he was a failed comedian who used to work at the chemical factory. His wife is pregnant. He needs money. So he agrees to help some crooks, but the crooks insist on taking him along for the job. The morning of the job, his wife and unborn child are killed. But he doesn't want to do it, but he ends up getting dragged into this anyway, and he ends up getting dumped into Vada chemicals and all these other things. And that's what drives him to be the Joker. Now, the other side, and so it's kind of attempting to portray him as a sympathetic character in the flashback. But the main part of the story is him shooting Barbara Gordon, crippling her, raping her, and recording it and showing it to Commissioner Gordon in order to drive him nuts, in order to make the point that anybody could have one bad day and they'll just become like me. And the point of the book is, no, people can have a bad day. They don't become like you. You're just fucked in the head. You're evil. Whatever you were before, this is what you are now. This is how you became. This is what you chose to become. You know, this was in you. You know, you could even make the argument, you know, he chose to go to a life of crime in the first place.
This is a different – that's a different origin story, though, right? That it's not, you know, like this one. This doesn't have
– No, they said – no. So I'm saying, so that's an inspiration. But that is a part of what informs who the Joker's character is. Whatever his origin is, this is what he is. He is unredeemingly evil. In this case, they – show you he's been in the asylum before. They never tell you how he ended up there. Not really. Everyone's made a big deal of, oh, he becomes evil when he loses medication. He kills those three people before he gets off, before he loses the funding is cut off and he's told we can't give you any more medication. And we don't even know
that was self-defense, though. That was self-defense.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, no,
kicking him, the moment they started kicking him, that is attempted murder. And so he took him up.
No, first of all, no. Yes. No. Yes. One, no. Yes. No. Yes. One, kicking someone is not attempted murder. Two, Two, him shooting the first two people, whether he kills them or not, he was defending himself. That's self-defense. Third guy shot in the ass. Then he follows him out of the subway car. And if you watch his body language, you watch his face as he's doing that. He's not a scared man trying to protect himself. He's a hunter. He is a predator. He is collected. He is cool. He shoots the man with anger and aggression.
He's in the moment.
He is way beyond in the moment.
Okay.
I got to go with Mike on this one.
He wants to be judge and jury at that point.
No, he was.
He did to him.
No, he is calm. He is collected. And he is hunting him. He's stalking him through the subway. He shoots him.
I don't
know
if I'd quite go that far to the opposite of the description, but I do agree that he was purposeful in his.
Oh no! Because he's playing a game
assassination of the third man.
He's looking. Yeah. Is he on the subway? Is he off the subway? He sees him get up, and then he shoots him once. He falls down. He goes, walks up to him, and he plugs him two more times when he's already down. Mm-hmm. Or maybe three more times.
Yeah, he executes them.
However, actions cause reactions, and especially for a mentally ill person, had they not attacked him, they would still be alive today, and he would have not been a murderer either. So you're absolutely right.
The whole string of events.
Right.
My point is that I think a lot of that was there in him to begin with, was questions for whether he got how he got the gun. I think if you look at all that stuff, right, the laughter doesn't come at random times. It comes when he specifically, with one or two exceptions, depending on the county, comes when he's upset with somebody, when he's angry at somebody.
Right. He's mentally ill.
No. I think, he is, but I don't think it's the thing where it's a nervous condition. He says to his mother at the end of the film, you told me it was a condition, but it's who I am.
He only becomes the Joker because of what happens around him. Had none of those things happened around him, he would never became the Joker.
I don't know about that. To me, that's the Joker inside of him.
Go ahead,
Chrissy. That's the Joker part of him coming out and wanting to be let out.
Okay, but that's all well and good. But we are looking at the breakdown of a psychotic person. Right. And when that happens, what happens is you have this person. Now, he said, you told me it was a condition and it's who I am. Now, I question that because here's why. There's a snippet in the movie where we find out that the reason that he has this condition is because the boyfriend, the mother's boyfriend, when he was a boy, beat him on the freaking head and left him tied to a radiator for days. And that particular condition that he had, it's called It's called the pseudo-bulbar effect. Right. And it's laughing instead of crying, or it's actually more associated with crying instead of laughing, but laughing could be it. And what it specifically comes from. It can also be called emotional incontinence. There's a couple of other types. There's a couple of other names for it, too. It's characterized by sudden and inappropriate laughing and crying. It is usually caused by a neurological condition which pre-exists or a brain injury. But because of this, okay, not only is his mother a druggie, and we find out later that she really fucked him up and let her boyfriend beat him and all of this other stuff, so she's insane too. So he already has a predisposition to insanity, which is why I agree with you, Mike, that yes, this Joker was in him. But it's kind of like anorexia, you know? There's a whole lot of predisposition to things like anorexia, things like bulimia, things like alcoholism.
Yeah, drug abuse, OCD,
everybody becomes that way unless you are exposed to these conditions. And that's kind of what Poe was talking about when he talked about the triggers, right? What makes a man mad? What drives a man to psychosis? There's triggers. There's extreme oppression, extreme passion, extreme guilt. And there is a fourth one that I can never fucking remember, but those are, and he really fits that because first of all, he's already a loser to begin with because he's got these problems. He is completely isolated other than the obvious awkwardness because of this. He lives with his mom and he's not really with it. And the things that he's writing down in his notebooks aren't really jokes. I mean, I don't even know what they are, but in his mind, they're jokes. We see him out watching comics at a comedy club, and even there, he's laughing at totally inappropriate times. He's completely out of step with the world. But everything this guy tries to do to try to bridge that gap is misconstrued because he's so awkward. And he's very misunderstood. He's misinterpreted in almost everything he does. Yeah, we're not really sure where he got the gun, you know, but getting back to these things he writes down as jokes, I found one of them very interesting. He said one of the things he wrote in his journal was the worst part of mental illness is that people expect you to behave as if you don't.
Right.
In other words, like, yeah. He's like, I'm behaving. I'm mentally ill, but I'm behaving. So he's aware that he's got issues. And yeah, the Joker right. was inside him, and I agree, but I'm saying that had he not had these three guys attack him in the subway, and quite frankly, I didn't feel bad for those pieces of shit. I was like, shoot him. Three less
absolutely.
Pieces of shit. Fuck you, and kill them all.
Piece of garbage, all three.
Yeah, well, so they were picking on the woman, and that's what made him upset.
Absolutely, they were going to rape.
Rape the woman, and he freaked out, and that was what started it. But then, like, there's that moment where he's playing with the gun, which was really disturbing, and he shoots a hole in the wall, and he freaks out, like, "Holy fuck, what did I just do?"
Yeah.
I think there were parts of him that didn't understand what this thing was he was holding.
Yeah, well,
I really do.
There's one thing that you know, as brought up about his childhood trauma is not just that incident, but the very fact that his mother had built a false existence around him.
Right. You know, we haven't even discussed that yet.
Because she is herself delusional about his so-called relationship with Thomas Wayne.
Yeah, pretending that he's the son of a bourgeois. Brahim, yeah. Wealthy person, yeah.
And, you know, cause, and constantly, you know, this person going on ever since he was little. So this was just years and years of this delusional lying and just manipulation. And it just created this false world. And, you know, alongside this condition, it just made things so much fucking worse. So he can't meld with the rest of the world because he is the way he thinks that he himself feels fake. He doesn't right. feel like a real person because of this.
And Abe, you mentioned the situation that he lives in where they don't have the money to get the proper medical treatment that he probably needs.
Well, it's
they have to go through the local, you know.
Oh, so he's going through the social social worker.
Right. Okay.
We know he says he stops taking his medication. We don't know when he stops taking his medication.
Yes, that's true. That was a point I wanted to bring up. What did you think of that?
Well, he couldn't take it anymore, right? Because he didn't get it anymore because the government stuff was cut.
Well, but he gets it. Well, we know that the program was cut. He says, where can I get, what can I do? What do I do now about my medication? Cuts away. Yet about a week. I don't know anybody who only gets prescriptions 1 week at a time. That might be my ignorance. I think he chooses to take, because he says, I stopped taking my medication. I think he chooses to stop taking his medication. I don't think Arthur's real. I think, you know, what Abe is saying, I think everything that he was built about was a lie. And he's slowly discovering it's all stripped away one bit at a time. You know, to the point that he discovers he isn't who he thinks he is. He doesn't even have a real name.
Yeah. And, you know, this has become a really late coming of age, almost like finding your own identity at your worst. Because he's, from a chunk of the film, he's trying to get his life together in the existence he has. Then he believes that he has to try to make connections with a family he never knew he had, which turns out to be all complete bullshit. And discovering the work that everything was just false, that his life was all of trauma and just manipulation and lies and deceit from the one person he thought really cared about him. And
right,
so
everything
starts crumbling down around him. And now he's lashing out and just trying to make something that allowed the world to remember that he existed in even this, some way.
I
just wanted to ask a question about a particular incident in the movie because it's tied to this. Because we've talked about his delusion with the talk show host and we've talked about his delusion with the next door neighbor. What do we think about the fate of his mother? Did that happen?
That's a question.
Yeah.
Let's discuss this because, again, he's an unreliable narrator. So. Did he really get the gun here? Did he really kill his mother? Did he really hunt the guy on the subway? You know, on and on and on. I don't know how to portray the film, but I'm assuming everything that isn't disputed happened. So I think he got the gun from the coworker. I think he killed his mother. I think he stalked the guy in the subway. But I don't think he had the girlfriend down the hall, because that was disputed later in the film. So if it wasn't disputed later in the
movie's disputed, because at the end he ends up in a psych ward, right? How'd he get there? We don't see that happen. Was he there the whole time? Maybe.
Well, right.
Maybe this whole fucking movie is a delusion.
There's people that say that it might all be a delusion after he goes into the refrigerator.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I think this is one of those movies that could go either way. Do I think he killed his mother? I think he probably did just because of – I mean, I think we can all agree that the way this movie shows a person losing his shit is really well done.
Yeah,
it just comes apart a little at a time. And what happens is he gets kicked and he gets kicked and he gets kicked. And I made a list of every single time he kind of got kicked. And that was always just one more damn it, like one more thing. He was already fragile. He was already screwed up. Like Mike said, the Joker was in here, but then he had all of these other things. And like Abe said, with the lack of identity and all of this other shit, do I think I killed his mom? I totally think he probably did, because like Abe said, he felt this sense of betrayal.
Betrayal, but he found out that she allowed someone to molest him and torture him and kick him in the head as a kid.
Right. Uh-oh. I believe he killed his mom. When a child lives with the parent, we've seen this many times. It's been depicted in movies. It's been, you know, What's Eating Gilbert Grape, all this other stuff. But when a child is very dependent on his mother, and his mother is basically his whole world, like it is as adult, you know, they're adults, like this is here. When the parent or the mother betrays him, especially with his fragile personality and the way he's been kicked, I think it was probably 30 or 40 times worse than it would be in a, quote, I'm going to say, mentally healthy and well-adjusted person. Mm-hmm. And given that he had already at that point hunted and shot the guys on the subway and gotten a taste of what killing someone feels like, I would completely believe that he had no compunction in doing that at that point. Because at that point, he had been killing people.
He was done.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think so. And also, there was this one, a lot of times people, when they are mentally unstable like that, and the adults are living with the mother, let's just say the mother for sake of the movie, if they do feel betrayed, that's the first place they go. There are a number of cases that you can find if you look at them online where it's this type of setup where the adult who is not very mentally stable is living with an equally unstable mother and basically kills her. Mm-hmm. That is a scenario that sadly it's out there. Just Google it. It'll show up. This is a common thing. So that's why when I saw him kill the mother, particularly in that point in his development, I did not think it was a delusion. I was like, yeah, he totally killed her.
Yeah, I honestly think, anything that wasn't disproven or contradicted at the end and shown to us, I'm assuming happened. But again, that's just how I feel to interpret the film.
Okay.
I just wanted to ask what everybody thought. I think he killed her, too.
I definitely think he definitely killed her. I think that also would complete the cycle of his transformation and his mental downward spiral. You know, he was destroying the last remaining piece of the lie that he's been living.
You know? Right. Well, and Mike has a good point. I mean, yeah, maybe the Joker was always in him. You know, so he was born damaged or he became damaged because of the abuse he had as a child. But I'll also say that he wasn't becoming the person he was supposed to be. I think he became the person he did because that possible reality of who he could become, which is the Joker, occurred because he was beaten, as you say, Chrissy, so many times to the point where he finally completely snapped and became the Joker as we saw at the end of this film.
There's one thing I think that really is another thing about ties into the identity is that the tear and the makeup of the Joker, while kind of capturing some of the comic book presentation, it also kind of contrasts with the rest of the background. It's very popping in color and very stands out. And it's more almost like not just to show the character, but also to make kind of represent how Arthur wants to be seen. He wants to be noticed, you know?
Well, Abe, that's a good point, because there's two things that turned him into dressing and displaying how he presents himself. And the first was the incident on the train where he gets attacked and he shoots the three attackers. And he was wearing makeup from, because it was the day he got fired, basically. So he still had his clown makeup on. And so it went around in the newspaper, man in clown makeup kills three wonderful, nice gentlemen that were white per-collar professionals and blah, blah, blah. And then the second was he's doing stand-up comedy on amateur night at a club. And unknown to him, a film crew was there and recorded his act. And his act was bad. And then on national TV, his idol, played by Robert De Niro, the talk show host, says, this guy is a clown or a joker. And with that, those two incidents, he decides to embrace the fact that he is a clown or a joker, because he has a politician who calls him a clown. And then he has a guy on TV who embarrasses him nationally and calls him a joker. And so at that point, as you said, Abe, he starts wearing all these bright colors and, you know, really paying attention to how he puts on his makeup and his hair and whatnot. And with the 1970 palette, as you said, Abe, earlier, it is a striking a contrast to what we see, you know, on the screen, besides where he stands, basically, where he is as a character.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the clown comment's clearly, to me, a deplorable callback. He's writing when he's, if you watch his notebook, when he's watching the comedy show, he's writing down things like funny suit, but not too funny, or like but stylish, slicked back hair. He's taking notes of the comedy show, as Chrissy pointed out earlier, laughing at all the wrong spots, because he doesn't have a good sense of humor, or a sense of humor that most people would agree with. As he points out later in the film, humor is subjective. And that,
it's like a child with a knock knock joke. You know, they think it's the most funniest thing in the world, while adults will, you know, like think it's just cute.
Yeah.
Right. And Joker has, despite what many people think, Joker's never really been funny in the comics. That character, he's the only reason anyone ever laughs is because they're afraid that it's usually one of his henchmen, and they're afraid if they don't laugh, he'll kill them.
Right.
He's the only one that's laughing. You never know what's going to make him laugh, because it might just be pushing you under a truck will be what he finds funny at that particular moment.
Right. Right.
You know, that to me, the point of the knock knock joke, right? Knock knock, who's there? The police, ma'am. Your son was hit by a drunk driver. He's dead. He finds that's the kind of thing Joker would find funny. Mm-hmm. Nobody else does. And he goes into his tirade about, well, humor is subjective. I think that's why Joker's laughing at all the wrong spots in the thing. What he finds funny isn't what everybody else finds funny. He finds humor in chaos, in death, in destruction.
And by the way, has anybody else watched The King of Comedy?
I haven't.
Yes.
Phil, Chrissy?
I have not.
Okay.
No, I haven't either.
And they borrow heavily from that movie.
Oh, and De Niro volunteered. He said he would be willing to reprise his character of Rupert Pumpkin for this.
Uh-huh.
But there's no way that works, because that was set in, you know, 1980, 81, and he's gotten a little bit older since then, since this movie set the same time frame. But it, you know, if they had set this in modern times, which I understand why they didn't do it aesthetically, then you totally could have made that be his character.
Right. Because I was reading review after review comparing this movie to The King of Comedy. I was like, well, I got to watch this movie and find out why. And, whoa, yep, okay, I get it.
Now, Mike, I see what you're trying to say, that he thinks things are funny and death, destruction, and whatnot. And maybe the character of the Joker, as comic book fans know that to be true, but in this film, I don't think that's true at all. I think.
Oh, he is so just, happy at the end of the film when the city is burning.
I think he's just mentally ill, and then by the end of the film, he has basically embraced vengeance, I guess. But I don't think.
Well, I don't think it's Vengeance. I think it's there. Again, I think that character's there the whole time. I think we don't know why he was institutionalized previously. Remember, he's already been in an institution. He was already in the hospital in a coat in a padded room. Right. Or at least that's what we're led to believe.
But none of these things would have happened if he wasn't embarrassed on national TV or attacked in an alley and on a train.
No, that's kind of the whole point.
And all these other things, Mike.
I don't necessarily know that entirely. I think he's a time bomb that was waiting to go off. Bad things happen to people, including being attacked on subways. Right. So
has it happened to you or me or Eric or Chrissy or Abe?
No, but I also didn't grow up. But I also didn't grow up in New York City in the 1980s. and in Gotham, which is supposed to be the worst, part of New York City for all eternity. But I mean, that's one of the things I will say I loved about this film, because for those of us old enough to remember, they really nailed New York City in 1981. People forget. People have romanticized, the old time square days and the grindhouse theaters with, sticky floors and all the rest of it. New York City had a lot of shitty things back then. And people are like, oh, it's lost all its character because it's become so gentrified and millennial, and it's like, and there's falafel on the street corners.
And you can fall down junkies. Without worrying about getting infected by a needle.
Yes. But yeah, it was a dangerous place to live. It was a disgusting place to live. You did have the garbage strike in New York City around that time. If somebody's living in that environment, things will happen. Things happen to people who live in New York City all the time. They don't all go there. The odds that things would happen to him in his life, he lost a job. I've lost a job.
Mm-hmm.
Other people have lost a job. Yeah, there's other things. He had the preconditions. But again, it was a ticking time bomb.
But let me ask you something. Because, all right, we get this whole lead up to the final sequence of events. And he's at home, and he's practicing for going on the show, right? And we are led to believe that his plan is to go on this show and commit suicide on national television, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So he gets there, and for some reason, maybe it was something that was said before he went on, but for some reason he changes his mind and decides instead of committing suicide, he's going to commit murder.
What I got from it is that he had practiced in the lead up to his suicide.
Right.
There's a scene he's practicing, and I guess the conversation just kind of with the TV host and everybody on stage just kind of swerves it until it becomes a completely different thing that goes completely against his plan. Because he planned his entrance to be very smooth and then lean up to his joke for his punchline.
Right.
And maybe that's probably what it was that he get, everybody was inadvertently poking at him, and that just put him into a different war path.
But here's where I'm going with this, which is that we end up with this scene after he murders the show host, where he's standing on the hood of the car and everybody's cheering, and he ends up like this anti-hero who's inspired this revolution. But that wasn't his fucking plan, was it?
Right. No. Okay. I think if there's a commentary about modern times there, which is something of an ill fit given the nature of what 1981 New York looked like, let alone 1981 Gotham.
I don't know if it's ill fit. I think there's more intent than you think.
No. I'm saying it's an ill fit in order to try to take the conditions of that time and superimpose them on the conditions of the present time. Okay. I think that it's the I think personally it's that you have a person exploiting people and exploiting their divisions for their own personal gain.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe he doesn't. I don't believe he has a cause. I don't we see what he's looking for in some ways, his approval kind of in the first film. He's looking for an audience. He's looking for attention. And that is a big deal now, where a lot of these people, like the school shooters, are looking for attention.
Yeah, and he does say, he makes a point of saying at some point, people finally saw me.
Right.
Or people finally see me.
But
and
you could take a mirror as a reflection to society and blame society that creates these people.
Society doesn't create people. People create people. People are people. There's no amorphous blob called society out there. Society is made up of individuals who make decisions.
All right. Well, let me put my thoughts together, Mike, and I'll.
And that's my personal take on it.
Hang on.
We've gone past the point I was trying to talk about.
Right.
So which is that he ends up like he's in the police car at one point, and the city's burning, and the cop is like, "It's all becoming." He's like, "Yeah, isn't it beautiful?" And he says that it is as if he planned the whole thing, and he didn't fucking plan the whole thing, and that bugged me.
I disagree. I think he planned it more than you realize.
That's not what I saw.
All right, this is what I got. The big joke of Joker is that we attempt to offload responsibility for societal problems with loneliness, loss of purpose, depression, resentment, and violence onto films that dare to hold up a mirror. Fleck explicitly aims to litigate this passing of the buck when it comes to inequality and how we treat those on the fringes of society. No one needs to see this movie, but it certainly wouldn't hurt. And what that's saying is that society treats people on the fringes like shit, and then these people go off and cause mass murders. And I blame society as much as the perpetrator.
Can,
and that's
can
what
you
this
put society
is saying.
Can you put society in handcuffs? Can you ban society from Facebook and Twitter? Can you shake society's hand? Can you draw me a picture of society? No, because society isn't a real society is a collective illusion. It is made up of people and how individuals behave. When you get people pile on somebody on the internet over whatever the latest outrage is, it's people making those decisions to do that. It's people deciding to go along with what the cool kids are doing or what they perceive the cool kids are doing. But that's not society. That's people. Those three guys who kicked him on the subway, that wasn't society that kicked him on the subway. And he didn't shoot society. It was three guys who made a decision, and he shot those three guys dead.
Okay, then there's a defect with people, and society has to do something about it. And I'm not just talking about the flex, but also the people that were privileged on the train who decided to harass a woman and beat up a mentally ill person.
Right, and this is another one I found a little bit forced because it's a clear callback to Bernie Goetz. Bernie Goetz was not assaulted by three guys from Wall Street. You don't find a rash of three white guys from Wall Street doing things to people on subways. I'm not saying they don't, but it's not exactly the common story of how people get mugged on subways.
This wasn't a mugging. This was just
right. I'm saying you don't see that generally. Sure. It is a gross distortion of what real common crime unfortunately looks like. But it's trying to make a thing in the film. I think but it's a matter of using that. Look, Thomas Wayne defends them, but he defends them because he doesn't know what was going on. He knows that they're dead. You can argue whether they're harassing her, whether they were going to rape her, were they just going to kick the shit out of the guy and leave him, or were they going to try to kill him? You know, we won't know because they never had a chance to follow through.
We do know that Thomas Wayne, or whatever his name is, Wayne, he was using it to his advantage for policy. Because
absolutely. Just like politicians, you can't pick a politician who doesn't see a tragedy and run to the front of a camera.
Right. And the thing is that he's calling these guys nice guys and all this other stuff. And to what we saw, they were complete scumbags.
Well, that's kind of an interesting thing we see in a lot of the news. We always see people who pass away in different circumstances, always regarded as kind or as good people. But there's more very very like a good chunk of them are assholes. But that doesn't get people, you know, hooked onto the TV. They don't care about assholes dying. They want, you know, these poor martyrs and innocent individuals who are murdered to get the heartstrings pulled for the views and stuff.
So, right. Okay, so can we get back to what Eric was talking about, going all the way back to the his appearance on the show and rehearsing?
Sure.
Okay. Go ahead.
I think that's where Arthur kills himself.
What?
Okay.
Oh, okay. So you're thinking, you see, I don't think so, because again, this is an origin story of a character. I know it's a side story.
I didn't say Joker
story.
Kills himself. I said Arthur kills himself.
Oh, I see. Okay. Fair enough.
So what happens is he confronts Thomas Wayne. Thomas Wayne says, your mother's a liar. She's crazy. I'm not your father. I never had sex with her. This kind of destroys his perception of himself, of his life, his chance of hope, right? His mother's held out Thomas Wayne as his potential savior for the entire film. He's going to lift us out of here. You know, when he finds out how we're living, he's a good man who takes care of us. And of course, Thomas Wayne punches him in the face. Now, you could argue he might have been justified in doing that, given the fact, you know, that he's throttled his butler the day before and maybe was being a little creepy to his kid, the day before.
Well, not to mention he walked up on him while he was taking a leak.
He should have just pissed on him instead of punching him in the face. But, and I do like the fact, like, he calls him pal, you know, which De Niro does, you know, and this is a New York attitude, and that kind of tough guy attitude. He goes home and he strips down, he crawls into the refrigerator and closes it. And that's when the phone call comes in to go on the Murray Franklin show. And we don't see it, which is why some people say, well, that's where he dies. You know, well, I'm not buying that. I'm kind of with Phil, unless there's a direct contradiction, like with the gun and with Sophie, I'm more willing to kind of take the story on its own terms and assume that what happened is either what actually happened or something similar to what happened, at least from Joker's point of view or he emerges from his cocoon and he comes out reborn. It is then that he goes to Arkham. He gets the folder and he finds out.
Thomas Wayne was right.
Thomas Wayne was right that he doesn't even have a name, right? That he was left abandoned. So, and which is also a tip back to the comics, because his real name has never been revealed in the comics.
That's more of symbolism, because technically, you're right, he doesn't have his birth name, whatever it was, but Arthur Fleck is his name legally.
Right, but all that he was has now been stripped away, right? His mother is not his mother. The man he thought might have been his father is not his father. The man who he wished was his father has been mocking him on television.
Right.
He's lost his job. Anything he's had, he's lost his therapist, anything he's had is gone.
Right, the fringe person on society.
And at this point, you know, the film has been dingy, it's been dreary. For the most part, the colors we've seen have been red or whatever he's been wearing as a clown, right? I think the only green we usually see is the green of his hair.
Right, yes.
Or on the TV show, you know, and even then, most of when he watches TV, his home TV is in black and white. The news clip we see at his home, I think, is in black and white. So it's a very gray and dingy or muted color film. He walks out, rain's falling. Rain is a constant, is a frequent symbol of change.
Well, there's another big clue, too, I wanted to mention, but finish up.
He goes into Sophie's apartment. We don't know what happens in there. But it doesn't. But given that he walks out of there, kind of, and it with very aggressive, very dark, ominous, heavy brass music playing, you know, we see him naked and laughing. Next thing we know, he's in the hospital room with his mother, and the sun is shining in his face. And for the rest of the film, the light's on him. It's a bright and sunny film.
pretty much like the spotlight. It's like
he's in the spotlight. He's had his awakening. Yes. He's had the world's a brighter place, mm-hmm. right? He murders his mother, and then he goes home and he practices for the Murray Franklin show and pantomimes shooting himself. And that's kind of and we don't really see him, I think, from that point on without the makeup on.
No,
until the end film.
It's his new face. It's his new identity at that point.
Right. The next thing you have is him painting his face, and this is the closest he comes to resembling the comic book Joker because he's just got the white face and the green hair. There's no blue eyeliner or blue eyeshadow and no red lips, no red nose. He kills Randall. And he's christened in his blood. His face is splattered in the blood. I think another thing, symbolic thing, throughout the first half of the film, he's going up. We see him frequently going upstairs, mm-hmm. and it's a burden. It is heavy. Mm-hmm. It is hard. He talks about he's trying to do the right thing. And the only time he goes upstairs with ease is after he shoots those guys, and he's doing it out of blind panic. He's running back upstairs to be the good boy. He's fleeing from the bad thing he did. He's being the good boy. And then finally he loses his job, he punches the clock, you know, and he said, I forgot to punch out. And he goes down laughing his laugh, and now he's going down the stairs. And now mm-hmm. that he's rechristened as Joker, we see him not just going down the stairs, he's dancing down the stairs.
Yes.
In a joyous celebration, his movements are confident and fluid and smooth. He is exuding confidence. When he goes onto the bus, he's the subway, right? He's chased by the cops. Right? And he starts a fight, and he takes a moment to enjoy the chaos that's going on there. I think he says the things he does for the most part on the Murray Franklin show. He's not political, but he wants to start the riot. He says the things he says to start the riot, to tip the scales. Yeah. I think all of it is him using those things to his own ends. Because he could have just killed himself,
mm-hmm.
but he enjoys the chaos. He enjoys the killing.
But
he is not just a disgruntled guy.
Well, let me do a differing opinion. I think he says what he says to the talk show host simply for the fact that he wants to basically give the finger to everybody who screwed him over.
Oh yeah, there's certainly part of that, but you can give the finger without causing a riot. And him,
but to him, society is the problem. To him.
Well, I mean, Mike was talking about this shattering of everything, you know, how things are changing, and there's a couple small clues. I mean, the biggest clue is right in the beginning of the movie. What is he doing? He's standing out there dressed as a clown.
Yep.
And he's spinning a sign that says everything must go.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And right there when I saw that sign, I went, oh, this is going to be a movie about everything completely changing.
Burn it all down.
Yeah. Burn it all down.
A fucking ground.
Yeah, but you're not understanding, Phil. He's not supposed to be the good guy in the film.
You're absolutely right, but society isn't good either. And that's the point of the film.
Well, I think it's
a point of the film.
I think there's a lot of things that this film is trying to say. There's no wrong answer here. It depends on how you interpret it. But like I said, everything must go. He's about to descend into madness, into this person he's become. And what's really going, okay, quote, end quote, is the carefully structured world that he's built around himself to make himself normal. And you're absolutely right. The stairs was a huge, very obvious on the note. It was also a 3-beat, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they only appear 3 times. He struggles to climb them twice in the gloom. And the third time it's sunny, like Mike said, it's dancing down them. But it not only symbolizes his struggle to stay afloat, his struggle to carry on with life, his struggle to do the right thing, but it also shows that he's fighting the tide of who he is.
Yeah.
Oh, right. And he does Yeah, I missed one. I don't. I'm surprised I missed. I just realized it when he gets the file.
Yes.
But this hit, he's running down the stairs there too. That's where he's discovering himself, not by going up, by going down into hell where he belongs.
Yeah.
But, well, not only.
I'm talking about that one specific staircase, though, Mike. The one that's in the city there.
Oh, I know you're talking about the one, just but I'm one, saying. Yeah. I'm saying. So you have three instances where he's going upstairs. The subway and the two times on the main staircase, and you have three times where he's going downstairs, and it neatly divides. And running up the stairs after the subway is the last time we see him going up, right?
Hold so you're going into this real deep cinema critique where you're believing that he goes upstairs and downstairs, and that symbolizes heaven and hell, or good or bad.
It symbolizes his struggle. Which way is he going? Descent, is he fighting gravity or is he going with it?
Or at least it's a descent into madness.
It's descent into madness, basically. Yeah. I mean, on a surface level. But you could look at it in so many different levels. And it's not necessarily really a deep cinema thing. I mean, you know, it just so happens that that's what it symbolizes. I mean,
or it may not symbolize anything and he was just going down the stairs.
No, it does.
No, it's very obviously done there. It's also very interesting. It's also very interesting that they chose. Remember how I said earlier he's out of step with the world? I read an interview.
Oh, the world is out of step with him.
Phil, you're just being an ass now.
Phil hates symbolism.
What I'm saying is society is evil, and therefore
you're part of society.
You're right, and it's evil. And he's out of whack with society. So it may be the other way around. Society is out of whack with the innocence that he represented before he became the violent.
Did you see the pictures he taped in his notebook? He's not innocent.
And what were those pictures? I forgot.
Mostly hardcore porn.
All right.
He's pawning. What are you going to do?
I think it's interesting, and I've seen mentions of this, that they've chosen at the big, you know, where he goes to try to confront who he thinks is his father, they choose Charlie Chaplin as the particular film. They choose Modern Times. Now,
which was a story about a guy being ground up in the gears of modern society.
Exactly. Society is evil. But, burn it down.
But he's also delusional. Like
but it's also, it's about a man who just can't get in step with the times in which he's living. And so by the end of the movie, he puts himself in prison. And there is a reference to this in the scene in which Arthur is at the hospital trying to get information about his mother. And the guy says to him something about sometimes people commit themselves when they have nowhere else to go.
Now, there's also another thing I wanted to bring up is just not only the fact of finding identity and the sense of madness, but it's also finding agency within existence, control and everything like that. Because for a great deal of the film and most of his life, Arthur has allowed others to really dictate what he was to do. And he kind of just followed things along, thinking it would help improve things, you know. Because he's already broken at the point of his childhood because of his trauma and the way he's been raised. So he just kind of blindly follows, trying to find something to give him some sort of control and some sort of presence in the world. And when he finally becomes... And, you know, one thing I notice is that with the politicians and the people in power, they sort of try to dictate that they know what's best to
do
very thing. Like,
right. Well, and another interesting thing is when he goes in, right, to there, and he goes in and he's standing there in the uniform and he's watching all of these wealthy people. He's watching the Charlie Chaplin movie. The scene they're showing is Charlie Chaplin skating around on a balcony with no railing, getting closer to the edge. Mm-hmm. And this whole audience is laughing at this antic. So it's also symbolic of Arthur's eventual descent into madness. He's going off a cliff. And all of these wealthy people representing society almost laughing at him. Like being like, yeah, we're just going to push you over the edge some more.
Well, it also burn
it down.
Well, it also really shows the difference in terms of our lifestyle because before we get to this theater, we also get the dingy comedy club and kind of showing how each side lives and stuff like that.
Right. That's a good point.
We got the Yeah, we got the middle class people laughing at Arthur as he's trying to, you know, give his jokes and stuff like that as he struggles with his disorder and everything like that. And then we have it here, these all these wealthy people in these perfect suits and these comfy chairs enjoying the antics of this buffoon on getting closer to the edge. So we kind of see this almost like a little thing of how each side kind of looks down on the other in kind of a succession.
Or you know? Abe, it's not just both looking down at each other, but the elites and the movers and shakers pissing on the quote-unquote losers of the world.
Well, yeah, but what I'm saying is that even the people within the Jinji Comedy Club who probably weren't exactly high living were also laughing at those even putting in their.
Well, it's like, not to bring back a bad movie that we reviewed, 31, that the Rob Zombie film, but that was a film of where the elite pissed on the middle, and then the middle were pissing on the lower folk, and so it's just a chain reaction where the top.
I don't remember any middle in that film.
Well, we have the murderers, and then we have the wealthy murder, the people that the mover and shakers, and then you have the murderers.
And then you have the people that sum up everything Phil is trying to say by saying that people suck.
Yeah. Well, but here's the thing. Absolutely. But I think what you're missing is that the people that you're, you know, the clown movement are suckers. They are.
No, you could say they're suckers, but they're also people who are disenfranchised that have said.
Oh, they're disenfranchised, but they're taking their disenfranchisement out in a way that's going to be counterproductive, that is not going to do anything. And both sides are taking an incident that really had nothing to do with any of them.
Well, yeah, I want to join the clown movement. I want to do that.
And explain it. Well, look, the clown movement is clearly. It's you know, there's, and it's conflating things, and I think it's telling the fact that that on the one hand, they're called deplorables, like, you know, not deplorables, they're called clowns, sort of like Hillary Clinton calling Trump supporters deplorables, and are also wearing clown masks like the Antifa movement, right? These are people who are being manipulated and acting out in ways that aren't necessarily, you know, for the common good or the betterment of society. They're being, you know, used and manipulated by people in power for their own gain. And the people in power, and that includes Joker, don't give a shit about those people at all. Joker doesn't give a shit about the people in the street.
They're extensions of their will. They're basically.
Well, again, though, I don't think that's the Joker's point. I don't think the Joker was trying to make a movement. What he was trying to do was burn it all down. Other people were joining in to burn it down with
him. But he wasn't trying to make it. But he's not trying to change the world. He's not trying to make the world a better
place. That's what my point was.
All he wants is chaos. That's all the character ever wants. That's all he's ever wanted. And if the world was a happy place, he'd be unhappy about that too.
I don't think so. I think if the world was just and happy to him, he would be happy to be part of it.
I don't know about that. I don't think that's what the character enjoys. Again, that's my take of the character, in my understanding of who the character is, and I find the text to support that, because he's finding it funny stories about, you know, a woman's son being killed by a drunk driver.
That was at the end of the movie when he was already gone.
I think there's evidence that he's already kind of gone all throughout the film, that there's a part that's trying to break through the entire time. He's in denial. He says, I've never been happy. He's never found joy in anything. There's a lot of people who live in shitty lives who find joy in something.
I understand that, but he's mentally ill in the first place.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So
that's the point that Mike was just trying to make.
He just wants a piece of the pie like anybody.
Yeah, but I'm saying, nice, but I think you're trying to find. But see, here's the problem. You keep going back and forth between he's crazy and then giving him rational motives.
Well, by the end of the film, after he's murdered his coworker, you can argue that, yeah, he's a bad guy, even though he could be a revolutionary in another country at another time.
But it starts out with him saying that he's unhappy. He feels bad. He's already on 7 medications. He wants even more. I think it's clear the medications are just not doing it for him.
But, well, you can say, I can understand why he's unhappy, because he's forced to take medications, because he knows he has a mental illness and this laughing fit, and it's awkward. He knows that he's has all these problems. So I could understand why he would say, yes, absolutely.
And the first time he feels good is when he shoots three guys on the subway and he still is on his medication.
He didn't feel good when he did that.
Oh, absolutely. He goes upstairs, he goes into the bathroom, and he has this revelatory moment where he does a dance in the bathroom that's going to foreshadow him dancing down the stairs later.
He's got a point there, Phil.
Yeah.
All right, I'll give you that. I'll give you that. That's
his moment. He's like, oh, my God. That's his, and that's what he says later. He says, I expected to feel bad about it.
Yes, but I
can understand why he didn't feel bad about it, because these guys were kicking him in the head, where if they hit him in a certain way, he would be dead.
But they did.
The guy was in the
because he took him out before he killed him before.
And then he hunted one down.
Yeah.
Again, no. It was part of the.
No, it went way beyond that. Way beyond in the moment. That would never stand up in a.
Now, Arthur was basically in a state of euphoria when he killed those guys, because he started doing the dance. He was almost free in that moment.
Right, he was free because he got revenge on people who tried to kill him.
No, he shot the first two guys were heat of the moment. He shot the third one as he's running away, and you can make the argument that's still heat of the moment. They're in the subway car. He shot him in the ass.
He shot three
he
guys.
He stands up and he follows him out of the subway car.
No,
he hunts
him
down in cold
blood.
And murders him.
Tonight on Crossfire.
But that does not make him necessarily a true villain. What it means and what make him
it's
evil.
It's his realization
him,
afterward.
Killing people doesn't make him a villain.
But it's his realization, Phil, it's his realization afterwards that it made him feel good. He liked it.
Now, let me give my point, Mike. My point is it made him feel good because he got revenge on people that tried to kill him.
They weren't trying to kill him. They were just kicking the crap out of him.
But they could have killed him. That's a good point.
And he
they
murdered
weren't
Randall
trying to kill him.
They could have killed him, and they were people.
They could have, but that wasn't their goal.
Right, but Eric, if you were in a subway and people were kicking you, and you had a gun, I would blow their brains out. Absolutely. Now, would I chase the other guy down? I would chase him down and hold him until the cops got there. I wouldn't shoot him. But if they're kicking me in the subway. You're damn right. I would shoot the.
Well, I wouldn't have a gun on a subway to begin with, so that's just me.
But I would totally have one in a children's hospital. Because you don't know which of those fuckers are packing.
Those little bastards. You never know what they're up to.
That one's going newsy.
So whether he feels jolly after the fact, you could argue, yes, it's evil, or he's mentally ill, or he's now a revolutionary because he's.
We're just trying to make sure you realize that the Joker is not a hero, because we're worried about you, Phil.
As I said, you're the most.
I never said he's a hero.
No, wait. No, I don't think the issue here is whether or not anybody thinks he's a hero, and I know we're joking around. What I did want to say that I didn't get a chance to say yet is that they have done a wonderful job of making me feel bad for this person. Even
absolutely.
Even as he gets worse and worse and does more horrifying things, it's almost like, you know how they say you put a frog in hot water? Like if you put a frog in cold water and all right, if you put a frog in hot water and it'll die instantly, but if you put a frog in cold water and like cook it slowly, he has no idea that he's actually going to die. He can't feel it around him. And I think this is one of those films where you go into this movie, you know what it's about, you expect that you're not going to like this character. And I'm sitting there going, oh my God, I feel so bad for this guy. So freaking bad for this guy. And as the story progresses and he gets crazier and crazier and goes into deeper and deeper, you know, hell, it's almost like I'm sitting there kind of warming up in the pot like a frog with him.
So the moral of the story.
I mean, well, I never hated him at any point. I just always felt bad. And it's not like I liked him or recognized that, oh, you know, he's a hero or even he's an anti-hero. I just felt really fucking bad.
Well,
like,
I think
what this guy did, I felt bad for him. It was, and I just think that's really effective writing. If you can get somebody to feel bad for a person who's doing these despicable things.
But I think he's, see, for me, I think, and this was again, having done a second viewing, I think when he mimes killing himself, right?
Yeah.
Which comes right after comes right after him finding out, when he finds out the truth, when he's opening up the folder and finding out his history, that's kind of the last time I feel bad for the guy. And that's why I think that's part of the reason why I think you have a separation then between Arthur, who's the imaginary construct, and Joker, who's been
well. I'll tell you why I'm with Chrissy and feel bad for him all the way to the end.
But because you think he's your hero.
I haven't said anything. You're the one that's saying that. I'm saying I feel bad for him all the way to the end because we have a person on national TV embarrassing human beings. And we have this every day, every night with these talk show hosts. That's why I don't watch them anymore, because that's all it is attacking and being mean to people. And this guy is a guy that's a private citizen who is now being completely embarrassed. So obviously his reaction to blow the guy's brains out is over the top and illegal and first degree murder, and he should be thrown in jail. However, the justification why he does it, being angry to the point where I guess right and wrong don't matter anymore, makes him do something that to him isn't necessarily a bad thing, because he's taking away a person that is bad for the world anyway, even if he didn't deserve that fate. And
it's just a bad thing done by a crazy person. That's all.
Right.
Right. But I don't think he enjoys the act of killing. That's what that realization is to me.
Yeah. I mean, obviously,
because he can't tell me that Marty deserved to die for what he did. Right, tell me that Randall deserved to die. I don't really think the mother necessarily deserved to die.
I agree with that too. Yeah.
But I can
understand how somebody who's off his rocker
who's off his rocker, I can't say that all the people
are revolutionary.
The two police officers in the car that die or probably died transporting him at the end of the film, that all the people who probably got hurt and injured and died in the riots deserved what happened to them.
Right.
You know, because let's be honest, you know, Thomas Wayne was probably the exception, as one of the few of the rich and powerful that were in the neighborhood and got hurt that evening.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
And that's the problem with riots. They tend to have people, when you get people rioting, they tend to riot in their own neighborhoods. Nobody says, let's take a bus to the neighborhood that pisses us off and then we'll riot.
Is it a riot or is it a revolution?
It's a riot.
It's a riot.
There's no leader. There's no political goal. Yeah. There's no aim. They're a riot. They're people looking for an excuse to act out.
It's a ballroom blitz. Dun, 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 dun. Ballroom blitz.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Because it wasn't like a political movement, a film. It wasn't a film that showed a political movement that said we're going to bomb this building because we're sick and tired or whatever. So that's different.
Although I will say, you know, earlier we were talking about ridiculous, you know, critics and things like that early on. And boy, I mean, I should not be surprised by this because it's The New Yorker. And as far as I'm concerned, I wouldn't even wipe my ass with two pages of The New Yorker.
Sucked.
That review was just ridiculous. You know what it showed me? How stupid the people that work at that magazine are. I was like, oh my God.
I never read the review.
Oh my God, dude, it is so stupid. They come out and they go, it was something to the effect of this movie is like a travesty or it's ridiculous or something, because it's not taking our very serious political, like whatever's going on in the world, seriously, and instead it's entertainment for Republicans or something like that.
Right.
It, yeah. I'm not even kidding you. It was the stupidest fucking review I ever read. Totally ridiculous.
You're not helping the case here, Phil.
Yeah, wait a minute. I'm going to look it up right now so I
can watch it. Here's looking it up. I'll say this. RogerEbert.com, which has nothing to do with Roger Ebert anymore because he's dead. The reviewer on that one gave it barely 2 stars or 1.5, ripped the film as basically what Chrissy just said, the New Yorker said. And yet the same people, the same person, reviewed 3 from Hell and gave it 4 stars and said it was a masterpiece.
We are way off topic. Let's get back to the movie.
One of my favorites, Phil, was people saying that this film glorifies guns and violence when there's 2 incidents of gunplay in the film.
Yeah, there's hardly anything in it.
And in the meantime, I'm sure they had a nice review about John Wick 1, 2, and 3. So, I think the media was terribly irresponsible the way they covered this. I think people looked at the trailer. They jumped to massive conclusions about what this film was going to be about and then went in with the particular agenda to see what they wanted to see instead of seeing what was in the film. And I think anyone who goes into this thinking that Joker glorifies incel culture or glorifies these wackadoos who go shoot people, I think there's nothing glorious about Joker or what he does in the film. I don't think he's you can argue there's certainly something kind of sexy and cool about the way Heath Ledger did Joker, maybe. I don't think you can really say that about this particular version.
Yeah, because this paints a bad picture for the Joker, because obviously the Joker does bad things, and it also paints a bad picture for the quote-unquote Mike, the society around him that creates the atmosphere that he lives in. There's a reason the city's shit. There's a reason there's a trash strike. There's a reason they're cutting the medicine and his therapy. There's a reason people are angry, on and on and on. So I have to agree with you, Mike. This isn't a film just to glorify incels and all this other stuff. I mean, I think Phillips has been ripped up and down a new asshole by these critics, at least in the United States, because in Europe, they don't see this. They think this is a masterpiece, and they're probably right.
Well, and my understanding is reading about this or listening to a podcast or when they talked about the film festivals and how this won the Venice, and they said Venice Film Festival tends to go against the grain, and it tends to kind of like to do things that pokes the film community in the eye a bit.
Because you got to burn it down.
But Phil, here's the problem. You've been saying burn it down almost the entire podcast. And I don't mean tonight's episode. I mean for the last 8 years. So here you have a film where you get a guy coming along wanting to burn it down. You know, you're finding a thing to justify burning it down. I don't think this is justifying burning it down. I don't think it portrays Joker and his cause and the burning down of Gotham as a good thing. I think it shows what happens when people are manipulated by icons and they have idolized the character of Joker, not even knowing who he is, just as you get a lot of political figures, people who say, I'm going to vote for this politician because they mean this, and they don't know anything about who they really are. In some cases, they don't know anything about what they stand for. You know, they just say, here's a guy who's going to fight, or a woman who's going to fight for me, and they don't give a fuck. They want to be in power.
Right, okay, right, so, because they become Castro.
And that's the case with Thomas Wayne, I think, or at least as Thomas Wayne is portrayed in this film, and that's the case of Joker. Joker doesn't give a shit about the political movement. He enjoys the attention and the chaos he can bring.
Vienna was right. Sorry, Chrissy.
I was just going to say, I found the snippet, and it's from Joker is a viewing experience of rare, numbing emptiness, is the headline, which makes me go, okay, you're a jackass. What results is more than the strenuous effort to contrive a story with resonant incidents and alluring details, Richard Brody writes in his review. Joker reflects political cowardice on the part of a filmmaker and perhaps of a studio in emptying out the specifics of the cities, meaning New York, because, right, that's only one city, according to them, modern history and current American politics, so that the movie can be released as mere entertainment to viewers who are exasperated with the idea of movies being discussed in political terms, i.e. to Republicans.
What?
What the fuck does that even mean?
It's fake news.
I think what it means is I wanted this movie to say something I agreed with, and it didn't. Shame on it.
Yep.
And again, this is something where the film and I know people, and I know I'm not going to go pull out reviews. I know there were reviews, or people who were liking the film not because they liked the film, but because it pissed off the right people.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's also a stupid reason to like a film.
That's why Venice rules.
Well, I said please remember, Phil, you do know who they gave an award to this year, right?
Polanski.
All right. Thank you. That's because and the why they do it. Eric, can you please tell me why did they do that?
To piss people off.
I don't pay attention.
No, come on, Eric. You know the answer.
Because people suck?
Thank you.
Okay.
Ding, ding, ding.
That's a pretty safe casual answer.
Yes, exactly. If I'm going to you for an answer and you don't know what the answer is by this point, Eric, you know the answer.
It's either people suck or she's a witch.
Right. Yes, for the record, we also would have accepted she's a witch. We would have taken that too. It actually would have been funnier. Why'd they give an award to Polanski? And weirdly enough, it makes more sense.
Well, here's a good argument about this film. So Gary Glitter, right? They're playing that music when he's going down the stairs. Okay, and to be honest, I just went to my local football game, the high school down the street, and the band played that song. Okay, so
right,
say what you want, but. The point is people started ripping into this film, especially the people who didn't like it because it didn't say what they wanted. They said, oh, they're supporting a pedophile and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, it's the same people that think Polanski is a god.
and I'll say that.
And they love what's his name, too, Woody Allen.
Yeah, and Woody Allen, too. And he's a pedophile.
Okay.
He's a pedophile.
And this is. When I heard the Gary Glitter thing, I was like, oh, give me a fucking break. First of all, 99% of the people who have heard that song have heard it at a sports arena, and they don't know who the hell Gary Glitter is, let alone that he got nailed with, what was it, pedophilia?
Oh, did that happen?
Or something like that.
I knew none of that.
And he sold the rights to the song anyway, so it's not like he's making any money. All right? Yeah. When you're going there, right, you are looking hard to find a reason to piss on something. And I'm guessing you're going around with the list in your pocket of all the people who have been Me Too'd or whatever. So that way you know to check every reference to see do they make – oh, wait. There's something Kevin Spacey related. Bang. You know, it's – no. It has nothing to do with the film. It was not intended – hey, no, it would be really good. What if he did a song by a – pedophile or whatever it was he did, a sex offender in the film, to emphasize how bad a person Joker is. No, because the audience doesn't get it. It's a triumphant song to illustrate his emotional state at the time.
Yeah.
You know, that's all that it is.
That's right. And so
and by the way, Phil, we had our pep rally last week in school, and the DJ, who's a former student, you know, came and did the rally. He played that song last week, too. And this is after a week of people saying, how could you play that song from a pedophile?
Friday, the band, all teenagers, meaning underage, were playing the song in front of me.
Right, and people, because the truth is, real people have real lives. They don't have time to do stupid shit like talk about a movie for 2 hours on a podcast every week. Right?
And
they
yet, Mike, we give more to the films than these stupid critics.
Right. Well, sometimes, unless it's the Gallows. Or the Gallows 2. But, you know, this is they don't give a shit about that. It's like you're just going there with an agenda, And I'm sorry, but the whole thing, oh my God, people are going to die if they go see this in the movie theater. And then there was the Babylon
whole thing.
Oh my God, that was just, that made me want to throw up.
Right,
that whole thing was just so dumb.
Off of the trailer.
Right, and someone saying it was like there was the cops and it was the military. No, the cops and the military were overreacting because the media had ginned it up.
Yes, thank you.
They had ginned it up. I'm not saying the media did want people to get shot in the theater. Babylon Bee did, but I'm not saying that. But I'm saying they wanted the clicks, they wanted the headlines. I think they saw that they saw the trailer and they thought, oh my God, this is going to celebrate incel culture, and thought they needed to take this movie down as a service.
I didn't even know what the hell that was.
Involuntarily celibate. And I know that because I'm one of those weirdos who doesn't have a life and can obsess about stupid things like that. But and they said, we're going to do society a service and we're going to caution people from seeing this film because it can inspire negativity and might inspire someone to go on a shooting rampage the way it happened with Dark Knight, which had nothing to do with it. You know, because Dark Knight Rises where the theater... It would happen during Dark Knight Rises, not Dark Knight, and the character, the person who shot the
person,
and the person who shot was mentally ill. The person who shot up the theater never claimed to be the Joker.
Yes, right. Thank you.
He just chose that film because he knew it was a box office midnight and on and on.
Or maybe it had something to do with that. I don't, but I'm just saying it wasn't. It was not because the movie didn't inspire it. He didn't say, I did this for Heath Ledger.
And John Wick is okay.
John Wick is fine. You know why John Wick is okay? Because they fucked his dog. That's why John Wick is okay. They fucked his dog. They all deserve to die.
Off the rails. Let's wrap it up.
Guy, I think we're kind of going really off topic. I think we've run his course.
Well, it's a fair point because people were talking about shooting up theaters over this movie and pedophilia over this movie. So it had to be brought up.
So we did, and let's wrap it up now.
Here's a little thing, Chrissy. I don't know if you noticed this. Did you notice the Joker's costume at the end? His suit matched Murray Franklin's curtains?
Yes. Yeah, I thought that was well done. Well, because it was showing that he was sort of hijacking – you know, the media. And there was that comment I did make on Facebook on one of the posts, Mike, where I said the media was just, you know, where they said, oh, the media, it was like a jokey post, probably done in humor about the media's angry that nobody shot up a theater or something. It was really funny. And
that
I said,
Babylon Bee. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually what I kind of said, even though I knew the post was jokey, I was like, well, honestly, the media was not happy with this movie because one of the themes in this movie is that the media has control, right? The Joker can go on TV and do whatever and have control. And the media don't like it when you say that because they still like to pretend that this is not the second wave of yellow journalism, which it is.
Absolutely. It is. It's not even journalism. It's pundancy.
It's pundancy. Yeah, it's ridiculous. They're not even doing – it's hard to find real news anymore. It really is.
You have two groups saying we're going to cut up red meat for the political left. We're going to cut up red meat and serve it to the political right. And whatever your base is, that's all you're doing is telling them what they want to hear.
That's exactly correct. Yeah. There is no more news.
Eric.
Eric.
Wait, I'm sorry. Chrissy, why don't you get back to the World War II thing for Eric?
That's it. I gotta go.
All right, let's wrap it up.
Nobody wants to hear it.
Before we wrap it up, though, Eric, you do another podcast with your buddy Dan?
Yeah, I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Askanty Podcast. That's spelled Askanity. You can find it pretty much wherever you found this one.
Excellent. And Chrissy, you published a book in April, was it?
I did. You can find my book, The Shadows Behind, which is a collection of horror short stories at Amazon.com. Or you can go to my website or anywhere books are sold, really. But you can go to my website too at ChristyPetersonSchoonover.com and you can check me out there.
And stay tuned for her sequel, The Shadows in Front.
Ba-dum-bum. Wow, that's going to be a dirty book, Abe.
All right, so let's give our final thoughts on this film. So, Mike, why don't you start?
Look, I think the film has a lot to chew on. I think the filmmakers, someone said, are deliberately not saying what they intended to say in the film, which I think is a good thing because it's getting a lot of discussion about the people who liked the film.
Let's do another 3 hours.
And woo! I think that's a good thing. And I think there are a lot of valid interpretations here. And again, like I have mine, as I said, it's informed by my background. Phil's is informed by his. Eric's by Eric's, and Chrissy's by Chrissy's, and Eric's by and Eric's, and Abe's by Abe's. You know, and I think they're all relatively valid takeaways. None more valid than mine, but that's another matter. So I think it's a good film. It is the one thing I will agree with some critics. It is a dark film. Unless you're mentally deranged, you're not going to come out of here feeling good. Because Phil's happy because everything got burned down.
It's all fiction.
And I will say I did enjoy the Scooby-Doo ending of the chase in the hallway of the running back.
That was pretty good. I like that a lot too.
All right. Is that it, Mike?
That's it.
Excellent. Very good. All right, Chrissy.
I really like this film. I highly recommend it. I think it is a beautifully shot, well-rendered story, depiction of a man descending into madness. I really love all of the hallmarks of an Edgar Allan Poe story that are all over this thing. And I think you should not really go, if you're going to go to see this, don't go thinking, oh, this is a Batman universe story. Don't think of it as a human story. And also, like we said, take the politics out of it and don't listen to half the reviews. If you really want to go see it by the critics, if you really want to go see this, you need to go make your own judgment. You know, in the end, critics can say what they want, but critics are just people who have their opinions too. And it's your job as a person to, if you want to go see a film, go see it, make your own decision. I definitely think everybody should see this. I think it's a fantastic movie. And like I said, it's right now it's in line for my best film of the year, but I don't know. I really have to think about it, but I don't know. I really just loved it. So I would say yes, go see this, please.
All right, very good. For me, I actually think this film is very important because society is a bad place. And
it's not a place.
People are the reason it's bad. And examples of that are seen in this film from the woman on the bus where the little boy is playing with the Joker. And she says, "Hey, stop talking to my child." And it was just rude. And people just bad. And I think the film could be taken as art or just for fun or just as a superhero film. But I also think it can be a learning lesson because society, people just aren't kind. And I think deep down, Phillips, the director, is trying to say that people should be kind by using violence to show that. So I would state that, put your expectations in check because it's a very dark film. It's quote unquote a superhero film, but it isn't any superhero film you've ever seen before. And I think it has a lot to say about a lot of things, society, mental illness, attitudes of people, and various other things. And as Mike said, depending on your background and what has happened in your life or what you believe politically or whatever, you'll pull things out differently. And that's probably, as Chrissy said, why a lot of critics hate the film, because it didn't say or they didn't feel the things that they were hoping to feel from a film like this. So since it has a lot to say and a lot to talk about, I think it's worthy to just see in that sense. I will say it's probably my favorite film of the year, possibly one of the most important films I've seen in a long time, and big thumbs up. Let's go with Abe.
All right. So overall, I really did enjoy this film. I mean, this was, you know, well, how should I say? It surprised me a lot. I thought Joaquin Phoenix was fantastic in his role as Arthur. I thought the rest of the cast was really well in supporting the story as well. I thought that it was well shot. some really interesting music choices, and it was just overall a very interesting storyline and just a well put together piece of cinema. I did think that some of the characters and some of the things, the sources of material, were not exactly completely needed, but it didn't. At the same time, it didn't hurt the movie either. I definitely recommend checking this film out, regardless if you're a comic book fan or not. I still think you'll get something out of it. It's a little over 2 hours, but it really is well paced enough that it just goes by just like that. You know, it's really just the pacing is really nice and tight. Could be a little tighter in some places, but as I said, it's still a great film, and unless something really pops up to really floor me for this year, I think this film will score pretty highly in terms of the overall films of this year. Maybe not my number one, but pretty high up there.
All right, Eric.
I think this is a very good movie, and I would recommend that everybody see it. But I don't quite understand why some people are blowing it the way they are. Get a grip, people. It's a good movie.
I think it really could have used a Joker mobile.
Ba-dum-bum. All right, so this is a 2019 Joker directed by Todd Phillips. It's getting mostly positive reviews, and there's one major awards. It's still at theaters now. We'll probably
like,
be
like
there.
Like the dad at Christmas Story. He won a major award. Sorry.
Well played, Mike. It's going to be at theaters for a longer time. It's because it's broken box offices 2 weeks in a row for best opening in October and best second week ever in October.
And it blew away expectations, right? This wasn't something where they expected to come in and make that. They were expecting it to make like 70 to 85 million, 75 to 85, and it made over well over 95, I think.
And it's an R-rated film, too, right?
And it's an R-rated film, which doesn't happen very often.
Absolutely. Oddly, we talked more about what was going on in the film rather than the performance of Joaquin Phoenix. We've mentioned it in passing how great he was, but he was phenomenal. That's pretty much it. So,
Let me say on that, I agree. He had a phenomenal performance. It's an Oscar-worthy performance, but it always bothers me when I see an actor lose that much weight for a role.
Right.
I'm always a little freaked out by that. Oh, I wish I could do that. There's I'm not going to lie. There's a wee bit of fat envy in there. But it's also the fact that it seems like it's a real bad thing to do for your health.
Probably. Yeah, I mean it's possible.
It's really that necessary.
I mean it's easier for wealthy folk like that to be able to, you know, do 3 months or 4 months
he
of doing
can
that.
Or to pay a doctor and a nutritionist to keep tabs on him and make sure everything goes okay.
Indeed. So, hopefully we gave this movie justice. People, please mail us at darkdiscussions@aol.com and give us your thoughts of this film and tell us what you think. And I think that's pretty much it. So, Eric, I guess why don't you lead us out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about Joker. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.
Burn it all down.
But save the Twinkies.
Save the Twinkies. That's right. Well played.
Isn't it rich? Are we a pair? Me here at last on the ground, and you in midair. Send in the clowns. Isn't it bliss? Don't you approve? One who keeps tearing around and one who can't move. But where are the clowns? Send in the clowns. Just when I stopped opening doors, finally finding the one that I wanted was yours. Making my entrance again with my usual flair, sure of my lines. Nobody's there. Don't you love the farce? My fault, I fear. I thought that you'd want what I want. Sorry, my dear. But where are the clowns? Send in the clowns. Don't bother, they're here. Isn't it rich? Isn't it queer? Losing my timing this late in my career. Where are the clowns? Send in the clowns. Well, maybe next year.